Chapter 6, etc. The extermination claims have been so concentrated on Auschwitz that this book could justifiably end right here, because the central part of the extermination legend is false. There is no reason why the reader should believe any other part of it, even if the evidence might appear relatively decent at first glance. Hundreds of trained staff members were dispatched to Europe and employed there, to gather the quote-unquote evidence for exterminations and related crimes, and we have seen what kind of story they have presented with respect to Auschwitz, a fabrication constructed of perjury, forgery, distortion of fact and misrepresentation of documents. There is no reason to expect a better case for the less publicized features of the extermination legend. Nevertheless, the remainder of the story should be examined, partly for the sake of completeness, partly because the examination can be accomplished rather quickly, and partly because there is a respect, in which one feature of the legend may be partially true. It is also convenient to review here a few odd matters that might strike some readers as evidence in support of the extermination claims. More extermination camps. The evidence for exterminations at Belzec, Chełmno, Lublin, Sobibor, and Treblinka is fairly close to zero. There is the Hus affidavit and testimony, and the Gerstein statement. There is a draft of a letter by Dr. Wetzel, another Nazi who became immune from prosecution, speaking of there being, quote, no objections to doing away with those Jews who are unable to work, by means of the Brack remedy, unquote, N00365. The draft is typewritten and apparently initialed by Wetzel, who had been head of the race political office of the NSDAP, but was transferred in 1941 to Rosenberg's Ministry for the East, where he served as the expert for Jewish affairs. There is no evidence that the letter, which is addressed to Heinrich Lohse, Reichskommissar for the Ostland, map, figure 3 contained in the print and ebook editions of this book, was ever sent. A similar document, bearing a typewritten Wetzel signature, is NG 2325. Wetzel was not called as a witness at any of the Nuremberg trials, and was not threatened with prosecution until 1961, when he was arrested by German authorities in Hanover, but his case seems to have immediately disappeared from the public record, and nothing more was heard of him, except that he is said to have been finally charged in 1966. If such is the case, it is odd that he is not listed in the 1965 East German Brown Book. However, no trial ever materialized. We will have occasion to comment on Lohse below. The Victor Brack of Wetzel's letter was an official of the Führer Chancellery, involved in the Nazi euthanasia program. The present claim is that the gas chambers in Poland, exclusive of those allegedly used at Auschwitz, evolved from the euthanasia program which, it is claimed, employed gas chambers. Despite Brack's testimony, it is difficult to believe that euthanasia was practiced in German hospitals, by a method of gassing 20 or 30 persons at a time with carbon monoxide. Auschwitz, of course, must be excluded from this evolution from the euthanasia program on account, among other reasons, of the Hus testimony. Reitlinger and Hilberg do not seem worried over the confusion thus created in the structure of the legend. The euthanasia program came into existence via a Hitler decree of September 1, 1939, authorizing the mercy killing of mortally ill patients. Later, the severely insane were included. The program encountered deep hostility in the German population, especially because rumors of unknown origin immediately started circulating. The rumors claimed, inter alia, mass gassings of the sick and elderly. On November 6, 1940, Cardinal Faulhaber of Munich wrote to the Ministry of Justice, setting forth the Catholic Church's objections, and pointing out that a great disturbance has arisen in our people today, because the mass dying of mentally ill persons is discussed everywhere, and unfortunately the most absurd rumors are emerging about the number of deaths, the manner of death, etc., unquote. It did not take long for the euthanasia program to appear in propaganda, and in December 1941, the BBC broadcast an address by author Thomas Mann, in which Mann urged the German people to break with the Nazis. In listing the Nazi crimes, Mann said, quote, in German hospitals, the severely wounded, the old and feeble are killed with poison gas, in one single institution, 2,000 to 3,000, a German doctor said, unquote. This seems to be the first appearance of gas chambers in the propaganda but, as far as we can see, this claim was not related to the extermination propaganda which started half a year later, and in the course of which no reference, apparently, was made to the euthanasia program. The relating of the euthanasia program to exterminations came much later. At the IMT, the prosecution did not attempt to relate euthanasia to exterminations. It remained for a defense witness to do this. In the closing days of the IMT, Konrad Morgan appeared as a defense witness for the SS. We have seen that it was Morgan who had exposed the ring of murder and corruption centered around Commandant Koch of Buchenwald. Morgan was thus considered a quote-unquote good SS man, in contrast to the bloodthirsty scoundrels who had been his colleagues and comrades. He continues to be considered a good guy, although not as good as Gerstein, who has by now achieved beatification in the Holocaust litany. As a defense witness for the SS under seemingly hopeless circumstances, Morgan presented a story that had an inevitable logic to it and, indeed, the logic of Morgan's testimony has an importance in our analysis, which transcends the immediate point we are discussing. Morgan testified that in the course of his investigations of the camps, carried out in pursuance of his duty as an SS official, he unexpectedly encountered extermination programs at Auschwitz and at Lublin, but that SS involvement was non-existent or minimal. At Lublin, the exterminations were being conducted by Wehrmacht of the Ordinary Criminal Police, with the assistance of Jewish labor detachments, who were promised part of the loot. Wehrmacht supervised three additional extermination camps in Poland, according to Morgan. Although the criminal police, the Kripo, was administratively under the RSHA, Morgan was careful to point out that Kriminalkommissar Wehrmacht was not a member of the SS. Morgan claimed that Wehrmacht had been attached to the Führer Chancellery, had been involved in the euthanasia program, which is possibly true, and had later received orders from the Führer Chancellery to extend his exterminating activities to the Jews. Although the only real point of Morgan's testimony was the futile attempt to absolve the SS, the testimony is considered evidence by Reitlinger and by Hilberg, who avoid considering the fact that Morgan, in his attempt at excusing the SS, also testified that at Auschwitz the extermination camp was Monowitz, the one of the complex of camps that was administered by Farben. Morgan did not go so far as to claim that Farben had its own company extermination program, but he declared that the only SS involvement consisted of a few Baltic and Ukrainian recruits used as guards, and that the, quote, entire technical arrangement was almost exclusively in the hands of the prisoners, unquote. Morgan's ploy obviously inspired the prosecution anew, because it had not occurred to relate exterminations to euthanasia. It was too late to develop the point at the IMT, so it was developed in Case 1 at the NMT. Actually, the euthanasia program is loosely linked with exterminations in the Gerstein statement, reproduced here in Appendix A. The Gerstein statement was put into evidence at the IMT long before Morgan's testimony, but nobody paid any attention to its text. To us, this relating of exterminations to euthanasia is just another example of the excess fact. The inventors were so concerned with getting some real fact into their story, that it did not occur to them that there are some real facts that a good hoax is better off without. This seems to cover the evidence for gassings at the camps in Poland exclusive of Auschwitz. We again remark that the logic of Morgan's testimony, as courtroom defense strategy, is of some importance to our study. His side obviously calculated that the court was immovable on the question of the existence of the exterminations, and thus, Morgan's testimony invited the court to embrace the theory that somebody other than the SS was guilty.